Hello, and welcome to the Dear InfoSec podcast from the Information Security Forum, where we hear about, talk about, and sometimes even solve a few of the many, many problems that practitioners face day to day. If you have a problem and need someone to help, just send a message to dearinfosec@securityforum.org. Just drop us a line and we'll get right to it. This is the second part of the two-part episode about the creation of the Computer Emergency Response Team, or CERT, on the Channel Island of Jersey. The first episode laid out the basics, what a CERT is and why it was needed. This one delves much more into the nitty-gritty of the CERT's setup and operation. Thanks for listening, and now on with the show.
You've certainly, Paul, I was just wanting to ask about sort of, were you ever in any doubt about the usefulness of CERTs and sort of that emergency response, I guess, because during your early career, maybe that incident response wasn't quite as developed, mature as it is now?
That's an interesting question. If I was to be brutally honest, in the early days, we kind of looked over at that entity with a little bit of suspicion and thought, you know, are we opening the door to attention that we don't really need? Surely we need to control this, we need to own this. But I think over time, certainly a central government policy on cyber strategy has developed, and we recognize that the interests of the United Kingdom and beyond require us to all pull together. I think it kind of comes back to that point now that, you know, the NCSE in the UK ingested UK CERT, and it became something bigger that was looking at proactive and reactive measures to cybersecurity. Transcendental, it was across private and public sector, whereas initially it was more leaning into the public sector, recognising it needed to protect Crown interest, but that's moved on as well. But then taking it a step further is looking at the societal impact, because we now recognise cybersecurity is something that's not just a corporate distraction. It happens right down at the consumer level. And so we've seen a lot more interest and attention in trying to encourage, the communities and Joe Public to be situationally aware of cybersecurity. And just kind of turning that back to you, Matt. No, I'm not putting you on the spot here, but I spoke to a couple of taxi drivers and a few people in Jersey, and I said, "Oh, what do you do?" And I said, "Oh, it's cybersecurity," and da 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 da, and very much I recognize that this is something that I need to worry about, but I don't kind of really know what to do. And I said, what would you like to know? And they said, I just need to know how to stay safe online. Absolutely, that plays into the hands of something that we now have to consider, which is, the average person on the street. So have you been able to stretch that budget just a little bit further, Matt, and think about the islanders as well as the corporate interests and get them involved in your journey?
Yeah, it's really hard, right, getting people's attention, because if we're honest with ourselves and think about areas outside cybersecurity, how much attention do we pay to corporate messages, public messages, whatever else it is? Yeah, I'm really hard to reach. I mean, I've got two kids. Yeah, I'm hard. I don't always read all the emails from my kids' schools because there's that many of them. You've got to keep in touch on top of so much in life that's complicated. Your attention fades really, really quickly. And getting that through, it's the same with whether it's a population or a corporate workforce or whatever else it is, any really large group who are just busy in their day-to-day lives, it's hard to get that message through. One of the things that we have begun to do is we have an organisation here called the Fraud Prevention Forum, which is a partnership with us, the police, voluntary sector organisations, consumer protection organisations and so on. And we work together really collaboratively to try and raise awareness of these sorts of issues, the sort of frauds that you're seeing today. So when people lose money through phishing and smishing scandals and so on, it's really horrible. The nature of these scams is terrible. The impact on human life is really significant if people lose their savings or their house or their relationships or whatever else it is, some cases lives. This is really hard, but it's not just a cybersecurity issue. It's also a wider public welfare issues. So we do work with the police and the Information Commissioner and others to try and get these messages across. At the same time, we're limited. We're seven people. We can't go into every school and raise awareness directly. So I think I'm resigned to the fact this is going to be a permanent piece of work. Yeah, it's going to be ongoing. There isn't going to be a point where we've won, we've not done it, we've done it. Yeah, it's going to be something where we need to continually raise awareness. There's also a lot that organisations can do about that as well. So a lot of the phishing and stuff that we get or smishing scams and so on, there have to be technical as well as human solutions to some of these. You know, we've got governments of those roles too.
Yeah, but presumably part of your work is that behind the scenes sort of enrolling people to do some of that education and outreach and culture building for you in some respects, because they should be doing the right kinds of things as well, you'd expect.
That's it. That's why we work so closely with the voluntary sector. You know, it's got to be a partnership. And the same with cybersecurity providers. So we mustn't lose sight of the fact that we can't secure the constituency by ourselves. It takes an entire ecosystem to do that. And the private providers that we have are really key to that. So one of the things we did this year is we set up a cybersecurity suppliers advisory group to sort of engage and advise with us on how to work with them to sort of build that market from their point of view, but also to deliver the right services, the secure services into that market and help educate people as well. We're also working with IASME on things like Cyber Essentials, because most of our businesses are SMEs. And I know, you know, everyone who's listening to this podcast will know the strengths and weaknesses of different standards, frameworks and so on, including CE. But one thing's absolutely for certain, which is if you get the basics right, you reduce your risk quite significantly. So simple things like do Cyber Essentials. There's only sort of four key areas in it. It's not rocket science. Most organizations should be able to do it. You know, these simple messages really, really help.
Yeah,
that's a really, really powerful message, actually, Matt. Just to reiterate that, I mean, if I had a pound for every time I said exactly the same thing, there's an 80-20 rule that loosely applies here. You've got to get the basics right before you start worrying about the snazzy cool tricks and toys that are floating around our industry. But you know, once you're off that starting block, then you know, you just got to build and maintain that momentum. And again, it's, you know, the challenge as well, and you know, the great support that it sounds like you're providing over in Jersey and others doing the same is, it's just encouraging organisations to be self-sufficient. And, you know, I worry about small, medium businesses that are still just jumping on that bandwagon and you know, are waiting for the worst to happen, maybe hiding a little bit around this facade that it will never happen to us, which we know just absolutely isn't the case. But then equally, you know, there are entities, education is a classic example of that, where the funding doesn't come easy for them. And they need the support of public and private partnerships and charitable organisations to support. And even at the very least, you know, if the SIR or other organisations are just providing that signposting and support, that is better than absolutely nothing at all. So, you know, it's great to hear that collaboration is thriving and flourishing in Jersey. Hard to believe that. I think you started in role, was it mid 21?
It was mid 21. So,
wow. I mean, that's a lot, and a lot more to go. So if you kind of reflect back on the last 3 years, you know, what would you, this sounds like a job interview, but what would you consider to be your biggest successes? But what are you most proud of, Matt, in the last 3 years?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge was coming to understand that the first year of that was really going to be taken up by putting baseline capabilities in place, because we started with nothing and it was nearly a year before I could hire a team, get them in place and get them doing things. So initially it was me and a contractor. And one of the realisms, sort of points I realised very early on is it's going to take time to build the technical capabilities to really do the threat intelligence right, to do the incident response right, to engage with the international community in the right way. But there's always something you can do right now. So what we realized was what we can do right now is we can build a shared understanding of what the issue is and how we can respond to it, hence the incident response exercises and the involvement with the ISF and all the rest of it. Yeah. But also we can focus on awareness. So one of the big things that we did was Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So the Channelands Information Security Conference is probably, if not the biggest, certainly one of the biggest professional events in the Channel Islands, full stop now. You know, we sell out the largest hotel venue that's available to us, and that's pretty much just with local attendees. We do get some international attendees as well. But one of the things that was just really great last year at that was for somebody who came up to me afterwards and said, well, it was a really interesting conference, but what we really liked about it was we brought some external investors from other countries, and they came to that conference. And on the back of that, they saw what Jersey has to offer and how professionally we're doing it and how we're taking these issues seriously, and they want to come and base their businesses here.
Fantastic.
And you know, that's an endorsement. Really impactful, because that's not about security as a risk. That's about security as an opportunity and setting out, you know, that environment of trust in which you can succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a heck of an endorsement, isn't it? And I think you, Paul, talked a lot about that, Paul, haven't you? Just that, yeah, you're not the Department of No anymore. You should absolutely be about that sort of inculcating that culture, and but also as well setting things up so that yeah people can trust that things will go right and you can get the, you know, the support you need.
Oh, that's 100% true. You know, we've come such a long way as a community of practice, and it's now about, you know, realizing that we can create and protect value, almost at the same time. And it's not about what you shouldn't be doing, but it's about doing things in a safe and secure way. And it is a USP, you know, to Matt's point. Again, that's the cornerstone of the UK cybersecurity strategy, is exactly the same thing. You know, we want to be trading on, you know, the capabilities that we have. And it sounds like, you know, Jersey's in exactly the same place. And to hear that, you know, that endorsement, you know, is being followed up by real investment in the island. Well, that's absolutely fantastic. That's, you know, that's a bit of a Brucey bonus that probably nobody was really expecting from day one. But, you know, that just fuels the interest. You know, Jersey becomes, you know, is recognized as a secure place to trade and supports, you know, those ambitions for in, you know, trade, industry and commerce. That can't be a bad thing. And that's exactly the point that we're making. It can manifest as opportunity, and that simple change in language and in sentiment can really open doors, not just in this context, but even in your own organisations. You know, change the narrative, change the conversation. Think about what we do through the lens of value, and you know, that will open doors. I guarantee it will open doors.
Yeah, and that security superpower, right, is that we can change that. You know, that dialogue and that engagement, because there's lots of boards and organisations out there that want to do the right thing, but they need the framework in which to do it, the incentive to do it, and actually the environment in which they can do it. And that means us leading the dialogue sometimes and pointing out what these issues are. And, you know, that can really drive change.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think a lot of organisations look across the sector and go, well, they're not doing it. Why would we pay for that? And but I think if you've sort of got that, you know, everyone's marching in the same direction, you get that sort of fellow feeling, I think, and people sort of, yeah, this is a good thing to do. And it helps in all kinds of other ways as well. Because I think as well as a lot of those threats, and we certainly see that from the work we're doing Threat Horizon, that sure, you'll occasionally get targeted, but actually a lot of this stuff just is blanket attacks, and just, you know, everyone needs to be as ready as they can be. And, you know, and respond in the right kinds of way as well. Just to sort of close things off, Matt, I mean, it sounds like you're the busiest man on earth, but because it's a small team, lots to do. But what's next? I mean, is it sort of, you've got some ideas for the future? Sort of, if there's a project that you've got in planning?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that we're doing at the moment is trying to create the right legal environment. So we started off with no real legal framework in which we can do our role. And that's a real challenge, because effectively you're giving the bad guys a leg up. Yeah. And at the same time, you're constrained. So what we're doing at the moment is we're trying to produce a new cybersecurity law for Jersey, which will do two things. It will formalise Jersey Cyber Security Centre and my role in law, so we have a really clear role and responsibilities. It will allow organisations to communicate with us, because actually it's really, really hard sometimes for people to do so. So a lot of the time people want to tell us what's going on, but at the same time they've got their client contracts, other legal obligations and so on all to weigh up, and it becomes really difficult. So what we want is the right information sharing gateway, so that people, if they want to tell us about issues, they can. So we're going to make sure that goes into the law. But also we're going to develop on elements of the EU's NIS directive and introduce reporting requirements for operators for essential services. So they will have to report incidents to us within a reasonable period. And actually, you know, again, the key with that isn't actually the reporting of the incident, it's the dialogue that it opens up, the improvement in the threat intelligence that we have across the island, and the resetting of expectations, which is rather like, you know, a cafe having a food hygiene certificate or a hotel having a firearm. These basic precautions and actually the ability to interact with public bodies and so on to protect the environment as a whole is just a baseline expectation that people should be meeting now. So bringing in that law should be really powerful. It's definitely not going to solve all problems immediately. You know, these things are always a work in progress. So it will be, I think, phased in terms of deployment. So we're looking at covering most of the public sector and then financial services and so on at a later date. But that will really give us a powerful framework to develop these services. At the same time as that, a lot of it's also about developing the technical services, right? So we're a really small scale for a national cert. It means we need to think carefully about things, automate processes where other people can afford to do them manually. So we're really looking at how do we deliver scalable services. So this is being developed as our cyber shield to protect the island, which is a set of services that organisations can basically sign up for free. Similar in many ways to the sort of services that NCSC would provide in the UK, obviously complementing that. And that will provide a level of sort of active assistance that we can't do today. So all of that, when we add it together, should lead to Jersey being one of the more secure jurisdictions in cybersecurity. And that's really where we're leading for to. And that's the vision the voluntary sector set out for themselves 10 years ago as well, is that, you know, they want to be really good at this, and we're too small to be good at everything. Yeah, but we can focus and we can be good at the things that really matter to us.
I was going to ask just in terms of that, absolutely the right thing to do is to harden the legal regulatory framework around cybersecurity for the island. Is that going to change your marketing and publicity strategy? Because one of the challenges that we have, and we've seen this with NIS, we've seen this with other regulations, we've certainly seen it with GDPR, is getting that balance of what the legal requirements are versus the transparency of openness and information sharing that's required, you know, across vertical markets to keep everybody safe and secure. How are you going to adapt your messaging and how the Cybersecurity Centre can help? Because you don't want the legislation to kind of shut down all those channels of communication. So how will you get that balance right, Matt? What are your thoughts?
That's it. It's really, really important. This is one of the reasons we keep saying we're not a regulator. We are not a law enforcement body. Yeah, we're not the government. We are a critical friend. We're here to help. We will challenge you, honestly. Yeah. But we're here to help you, and we will keep your, you know, secret. We're not there to go and tell others for you. If you have a reporting obligation, you go do it. We are just here to help you, and we will be non-judgmental in how we do it, and we will keep confidences. Obviously, saying that is easy. Demonstrating it is something that takes time, and you know, it's doing that over time that's going to build that confidence. But I mean, on the information sharing, you're exactly right. Yeah, I think aviation is a really good example where there are both requirements to share information, but also a cultural expectation that information is shared. Yeah, even if it's uncomfortable, you know, it's safety information. You do share it. If you have a near miss, if you have an accident, the first thing you do is report it. It never occurs to you to not do so. And that's the culture that we need, because at the end of the day, cybersecurity is now a critical safety issue. You know, just need to look at the stuff that's happening in the NHS or the Irish HSE or across in the US or even more locally. And you can see that this can be a real life and death or well-being issue at times. So getting that information sharing is key. But what we have found is that there's a lot of willingness to share information, particularly at a technical level, but it is just hard to do. So if you take this into a corporate environment and the security team or the CISO wants to share with competitors or with industry or with government or their regulator, there are a lot of hurdles they have to jump over, because they'll be asked by their legal teams, you know, do we have to do this sharing? What are the risks of doing the sharing? Is there a data protection obligation not to share until we've got this resolved? Is there a contractual obligation not to share? So we've got to have some rules that allow people to overcome those. And that's just about creating this. The requirement to share really is basically just a framework that makes it possible. Because once you have the requirement, you can overcome the other restrictions and you can go and have that conversation internally. And they'll say, well, we've got contracts. And you can say, yeah, but actually, one, it's the right thing to do. And secondly, I do need to have this conversation. We can't do anything about the people who will not share ever. There will always be a small subset. So again, it's that 80-20, it's the people who want to engage with us. So the conversation actually becomes even more focused on culture and even more focused on encouraging people to share because it's the right thing and they can trust us.
Yeah, it kind of takes me back to I remember some of the conversations. I was doing a bit of work with the what used to be the Centre for Protection of National Infrastructure in the UK back at sort of 2010, 2011. And we were talking about, you know, the early days of the cyber information sharing partnership, and you know, in committees, I can't elaborate on too much, but we universally agreed that the importance of information sharing in the interests of UK PLC, and we would take that edict back and say, you know, these are the decisions that we're making as a cohort, only to be told by our lords and masters and mistresses that, well, no, because we recognise that information as competitive advantage. So we don't want you to be sharing it. And, you know, as a lot of CISOs will testify, there were lots of closed channels and back channels of information sharing, because, you know, we kind of rebelled against that because we recognised the significance of sharing IOC and TTP information. And we saw things slightly differently. But it had to be quite clandestine. Fast forward now, I think a lot of that has gone away. You know, we recognise the importance of information sharing. We recognise legal and regulatory obligations. So, you know, I think it's just to continue to build on that is vitally important, and support sectors where it doesn't come easily, like, you know, like SMBs, SMEs that have still got some way to go. But I'm really pleased to see how things have evolved, you know, from 10, 12 years ago, where actually that information sharing is happening. It's recognised as important. It's now incumbent on practitioners like ourselves and entities such as the cybersecurity centres just to make it happen, to provide those conduits and capabilities to move that information around in the best interest of everybody concerned. So it's great to hear that that's still being built on.
Yeah, good stuff. Indeed. Yeah, I think, if there's a message here, it is all about sharing. You know, we're all in this together. The information, you know, it does its best work when it is. Everyone understands it and shares it.
And visit Jersey, obviously.
We are happy to share our beautiful island with anyone who would like to visit and come and engage with our security practices as well and our voluntary sector. And you'd all be very welcome.
Do you know what? And the other thing I noticed when I came back from Jersey is there's a fair bit of rivalry between Jersey and Guernsey. Woo! Woo, dear! I tell you, it's all friendly, but, you know, definitely a bit of rivalry going on there, right across the board, which
It is friendly rivalry, but it definitely it adds to the fun and the dynamic of small island life. That's for certain.
Right. Does Guernsey have a cert, or is that your responsibility as well?
Guernsey are looking at their strategy at the moment, I think there will be more to see there in due course.
All right, interesting stuff. Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Paul. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom, or indeed just search for the Information Security Forum podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. These recordings are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn much more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.